Hey guys, it is Ryan. For years, Chumba's been setting the bar for online social casino fun, and it just keeps getting better with new games released every week and daily bonuses to collect. The fun never stops. So claim your welcome bonus now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Spring is sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
Welcome in. It's the summer season of Slapshot Radio on Nashville's best sports talk, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Streaming on the Game Nashville app tonight. We're talking training camp with a TV color analyst from the Nashville Predators, Chris Mason, going to be joining us tonight. We're going to be taking a look at training camp, taking a look at the lines, taking a look at the Norris Trophy race. It's all brought to you by Day One sponsor, Hermitage Family and Cosmetic Dentistry. The largest wine and spirits store in Middle Tennessee, Cool Springs Wines and Spirits, and our good friends at Lazy Boy Furniture Galleries Nashville with three locally owned and operated locations in Middle Tennessee. I'm Paul McCann, our co-host, former NHL coach and player Brent Peterson, and the host of the Preds Watch Party, Zach McCann. Coach, 97 degrees today. What? Did you only get 18 in?
Did it again. I only got 18 in, but the problem is you're just melting out there. It's just crazy.
I mean, you know,
you get a cup of ice and it's gone in 2 seconds.
And Zach, it's did you get any in at all?
No. In this weather, I'm looking at the golden tea machine. That's what I'm thinking. You know, why mess with the whole outside thing?
Indeed. It's Slapshot Radio Monday night at 7 right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. We're glad you've joined us. We've got Chris Mason joining us a little bit later. We're going to talk about his observations from the scrimmage yesterday and from training camp. But Coach, you've been to a couple sessions. Talk a little bit about the what you're noticing, what you're seeing.
Well, I see a lot of good things out there. The guys are all come back ready to play. They're in shape. They're in practice shape. They aren't in game shape yet, and won't get game shape until maybe game 4 or 3. But you have to just, and we have enough depth for that. But I've seen great enthusiasm on the ice. I've seen great plays, good plays. I've seen the goaltenders are both come back ready to fight for the job and fight for number one. So it was really good to see everybody back. You can't get near them because they're in a bubble. So.
Yep.
But that's good. We don't want to have any problems with that.
I'm really glad that they're doing that. I mean, you know, reality is this, and Zach, we were talking about this before the game. How many tests have been performed in the National Hockey League so far?
2,618.
And how many positives?
2.
That's awesome. That's amazing.
And this is with them still staying at home. You got to imagine once they're actually in an actual quarantine bubble situation in Edmonton that, hey, they might actually pull this thing off.
And you know, that's the thing I'm looking at, because you look at the positive tests in Major League Baseball even. Yeah. I mean, you know, it'll be interesting to see what happens in the NBA. Major League Soccer, I mean, the MLS is back, tournament is continuing, but they're kind of battling this as well. I mean,
Dallas and Nashville aren't in the tournament
because of it. But, yeah, I mean, at least there hasn't been that massive of a spread on any other team quite yet. So that's really good to see. But, I mean, you know, the reality is this. They get to the bubble fully healthy. They get to the bubble with no positive testing and get through that first couple of days without it. Zach, I think you're right. They may just pull this off.
I mean, I got to say, you know, and this is strange for me, but I'm getting excited. You know, I'm starting to feel like it's like, hey, this thing is actually going to happen. And I mean, we're a week away from hockey.
I mean, and that really is, quite frankly,
2 weeks. But
2 weeks, but who's counting? But, I mean, I look at it from a standpoint of this is a – you know, first off, I mean, we're talking about training camp in July, which is, you know, usually it's the rookies that are in town and we're looking at them. So that's kind of cool. But, I mean, there's plenty of decisions that got to be made. And I'm going to want to ask Chris Mason about this, but I'm going to ask the two of you. I mean, you know, the big question of on everyone's mind is, who do you start? And coach, I mean, you've got you've got a veteran player that has started every playoff game that he's participated in. And, you know, and you've got a young player that looks to be the future of the Nashville Predators net, at least if Connor Ingram doesn't have anything to say about it.
Right.
So, I mean, you know, you know, put on the head coach hat. Who do you go with?
Well, you still have lots of time left this week to sort of see him. And if you've seen the guy real sharp in net and goal and in practice, you're sort of leaning towards him. But both of them have been good.
Well, 5-on-5 yesterday, not a goal.
Not a goal, yeah. So I don't think you can make your decision until maybe 2 days after they'll probably get a period and a half each in the exhibition game against Dallas, something like that. You know, and then you just go and whoever's going good, because both of them could play. We've noticed that. We know that.
Right.
And Yussi's ready to play. He's ready to take over the reins. But is he ready to take over the reins at the situation? You really have to adapt to your whole game and your whole mind to what's going on. The bubble's around. You got the no fans in the stands. You have no. Can you adjust your game? And Pekka could probably do that more than anybody. So if they're both together in the same light and everybody's saying they're even, I would start Pekka. If Yussi had any kind of jump on him and Pekka was just having a tough time in practice, then I'd start Yussi. But right now, if they're both the same, I'd start Pekka.
Zach?
I can't argue with the coach at all on that one. I think he is dead bang on it. That's exactly what I would do right now. I think, you know, it's an age before beauty situation right now. And I'd not to say nothing about Pekka Rinne, you know, handsome man. But at the same time, you look at this situation right now, I think it's a little easier to transition to Saros rather than transitioning from Saros to Rinne should Saros falter. I mean, heck, if this was March 17th now,
right, exactly.
Then, yeah, you'd play Yussi Saros in a heartbeat.
Different situations
but
now, eh?
It's been a lifetime, and it feels like it's been a lifetime.
Well, the interesting piece is this, and we talked about this before the show, and one thing that I look at, Saros has not exactly been a fast starter at the beginning of the season. Comes on great as the season goes on, but these last 2 years, he's kind of struggled his first couple of starts. Where Rinne, I mean, honestly, the last couple of seasons, it is, and honestly, I mean, you know, I agree with Ty goes to the runner,
right?
But I will tell you, my thought process here is that I think that Yussi Saros has to win this outright. It has to be a clear.
Right, you're exactly right.
I don't, again, anything even remotely resembling a tie. To me, you got to go with Rinne. You have to, only because of not only the playoff experience, but again, there's this thing in the back of my mind. You look at the first month and a half, 2 months of the season, Rinne was an absolute machine. He was the same way 2 years ago. He was the same way 3 years ago. I mean, so he usually gets off to a good start. He's had an off season. As a matter of fact, if we really look at it, he's had longer than an off season.
Yeah, back in February was when he was playing regular. Then.
You know, so it'll be interesting to see what, you know, the decision that gets made there. The other big news breaks out today. The finalists for the Norris Trophy comes out. And Nashville, finally, when you look at the types of defensemen that have come out of this, that have come out of the Nashville system, you look at the Shea Weber of the world. You know, this
Ryan,
is the
Ryan Suter.
First Norris nomination. That's his first Norris nomination. But what suit? I mean, what? Weber had one?
No, he had two, but he lost the Lidstrom year.
That's right. That was a career one.
And it was the guy.
And then it was Carlson.
Carlson, yeah. He lost it to those two guys. He had great years. He was dominating the league. Mm-hmm. Everybody thought
he should have won the Lidstrom one.
He should have won the Lidstrom one for sure. But they wanted to give it to Liddy because he was supposed to pack it in then, and he didn't for one more year.
Yeah, right?
Like the guy didn't have enough Norris trophies in it.
And then we got to send him. Then we got to send him packing, which was even more fun. But when you look at this, though, I mean, there's been, you know, this is just the third Norris finalist in Nashville Predators history.
Weber, Subban, and
Yossi. Subban wasn't. Was he a finalist?
He was a finalist.
That's right, he was. I forgot about that.
He won it.
No, he didn't win it. No.
No. When he was his first year here.
Yeah.
His first year here, he was a Norris finalist.
He won it in Montreal.
Correct.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
That's right. I completely forgot about that. You're right. When you look at the absolute defensive factory that the Nashville Predators franchise has been. You look at just the defensemen that are – you look at as the top defensemen on their teams right now. You've got a Seth Jones in Columbus. You've got a Ryan Suter in Minneapolis. I heard somebody booing outside when I said you got a Ryan Suter in Minnesota. I mean, you've got a Shea Weber in Montreal. Right. You've got Roman Josi, Ryan Ellis here. I mean, you know, Samuel Girard making a name for himself in Colorado. I mean, it is insane the number of great defensemen that are in this league that came out of the Nashville system.
Yeah, they for some reason our scouts, their eyes see good players, and they pick 50th or 16th every year, so they had to be right in the middle of the pack. And then they pick out Ryan Ellis, who was a good player, but you could have found a forward at 15 or whatever.
And that pick was a controversial one because it was, I believe, 12th or 10th or something
along
those lines.
Yeah, it was pretty high.
Yeah, it was pretty high.
And he ended up working out for us. So our scouts do a great job. Yeah, our scouts do a great job, and their eye is on defense, I think, because that's where you build. You build from goalies to defense to forwards. You can not always find great scoring forwards. You can always find a forward that can play.
Right.
But defensemen are tough. That's a tough position to play, and goaltending is even tougher, so it'd be like a football player with a quarterback and a receiver and that, and away you go. So, but Josi, he's a terrific young man, and that's what's so excited about it, because I think he's going to win this one. I think we're finally going to get one.
It's a two-horse race,
right?
I think
Carlson and him.
I think between John Carlson, the Washington Capitals, and Roman Josi here. I mean, congratulations to Victor Hedman. I mean, 4 years in a row is nothing to sneeze at. That's an amazing accomplishment.
Absolutely.
But it could have been a multitude of people in that third slot, whether it's Jacob Slavin, Charlie McAvoy, a few other ones that come to mind. Frankly, in my mind, if Dougie Hamilton wasn't injured, he probably would have won. But if you look at the season that Roman Josi had, you got to go with him just from an all-around perspective.
It's going to be fascinating to watch, because it is going to be an Eastern Conference versus Western Conference kind of thing going on here.
They got the big markets over there. That's the only reason Shea didn't win.
Josi has that marketable style that a lot of hockey writers – I mean, that was the thing that surprised me. You look at every single thing with the PWHA, whether it's The Athletic or The Point or TSN or whoever, all of them are saying, yeah, we're going with Roman Josi.
Yeah.
Like, that's the guy we want.
And you know, again, a lot has to do with, you know, the old saying is not how you start, it's how you finish.
Right.
And, I mean, Carlson had a fantastic first half of the season, but fell off noticeably in the second half. And Josi started off good and got better as the season went on.
And Roman had to carry us at times.
Absolutely.
Our goaltending was shaky at times. Our forwards weren't scoring goals, and Roman Josi came from the back end, and he just led the team. He just did everything. He skated with the puck. He went and forechecked. He was good in his own end. So it's hard to get – the guy is a great player.
And he never had anyone like an Alex Ovechkin to pull the trigger on the power play with.
He never had to. That's exactly right.
No question. Well, we're off and running for this hour on Slapshot Radio here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. You know, they've been with us since day one of this show. The premier sponsor of Slapshot Radio, Drs. Jane Bacon and Aileen Kruger over at Hermitage Family and Cosmetic Dentistry. Man, with a great staff, a great environment, they do make it so much easier to get all your dental needs taken care of. Not only that, but it's just an incredibly clean and safe environment as well. I mean, to the point where, you know, they keep you safe while waiting. You wait in your own car. They come out to get you. They escort you in. They make sure that every possible precaution is taken while you get that very important dental checkup that is so important to your good health. They've got all the latest in dental technology. You've got to check them out. Their website is WeBrightonSmiles.com. Their phone number, 872-7762. That's 872-7762. Hermitage Family and Cosmetic Dentistry. We Brighten Smiles. Slapshot Radio on ESPN 102.5 The Game. You know what? Being introduced by the former voice of the Long Island Ducks, Eli Gold did a season. I'll tell you what a lot of people don't know, and Pred fans know this because of the year he did on radio with us. I mean, Eli is a huge hockey fan and honestly phenomenal hockey play-by-play guy. Really, really good. When Eli was there with Pete and Terry and Eli on radio, I mean, it was an amazing dynamic duo there.
and he has to do the show with the coach there in Alabama. Yeah, he does the show with the coach.
He has to do one with Nick Saban, huh?
Yeah,
oh, every week. Boy. No, but I'll tell you what, he's good. And the funny thing about it is my wife always says he always smelled so good, too. So anyway, we have got – speaking of good, speaking of a man
speaking
that just
– smell.
Speaking of smell – I think he probably smells pretty good.
Yeah.
Unless he's in his goalie gear, then all bets are off.
That's right. Your source for all olfactory news that there is fit to listen to.
Absolutely. It's Chris Mason. Chris, thanks for joining us tonight. How are you?
I'm doing great, guys. You guys are getting me all pumped up here and all the talk. And hockey's actually it's actually coming back. It feels real now. So I'm doing great. I can't wait for this to actually get going, but I'm enjoying the process here, and every day is a new adventure, and you're learning new things, and it's good times.
So, Chris, the first thing I wanted to get your observations of practice, scrimmages, things like that. What's sticking out to you?
Well, I'll tell you one thing that is really sticking out to me, and you know, I guess I look at it from a different perspective now, but I just really like the way that the coaches have approached this. This whole training camp, and you know, Petey will tell you, back in the day when you know, at first I was all concerned. I'm like, are they going to have enough time and all these types of things to work on their systems and get it back to game shape? And obviously, you can't really replicate an actual game when you're out there killing each other and doing all those things and the body contacts, full contact and all that. But I feel like when you come in at the beginning of training camp and a regular season, you do come in, the guys come in ready, everybody's in good shape, but again, you're not in game shape, you're in good physical shape, and you've skated a lot. But you know, you only have 3 days of training camp. You know, Petey and the coaches, they only have like 3 days with the guys, and everybody's on different teams. There's 50 players in camp. You have to take a look at a bunch of people, all those types of things. So you don't really get a ton of time before before exhibition starts, and then even before the regular season starts. But this has been a great opportunity, I think, for the coaching staff. I know they've kept in touch with the players throughout the pandemic break. Communicating, trying to get to know each other on more of a personal level and discuss philosophies and all that type of thing and build that relationship. And now they're able to, I believe, take their time, get the guys back in physical shape, and then slowly implement, work on the systems like I heard you guys just mention there. They've watched video. I got to talk with Matt Duchesne the other day, and they said they've been watching video of their practices and working on their systems and having a better understanding, and you get to really prepare slowly for one team instead of jamming a bunch of information that the players and the coaches have to, you know, cram and do, get a bunch of long meetings to get all the information necessary when you're playing an opponent. So I've just been impressed by how they're actually conducting the camp, and they're building up, and they're slowly putting things in, and they're working on the little things. And it's been really neat to watch, you know, from afar, and then kind of get some insight from the players.
We're on the line with the TV color analyst for the Nashville Predators, Chris Mason. Coach?
So, Chris, you are exactly right. That's the same thing I sort of saw on the team was practicing 5-on-5, 4-on-4, situational play where you could control it and control the power play and that. Do you think that the goaltending now is going to be pretty tough? And Paul just asked both Zach and I who we'd play to start the year. Who would you start the first game with? Or if you don't have an answer, you don't have an answer. But who would you lean towards?
Well, you know, this is tough because this is a question that I think is for me is the hardest one for the coaches. This could be the biggest decision I think that the coaches have, and especially if you look at this season, there's been points in the season where both guys were the unquestioned number one goalie. Pekka was at the beginning of the year; he came out of the gates, he was unbelievable. I think he went 8-0-2 or whatever it was, but the team wasn't playing that great. They were scoring some goals, but I think, you know, his play really kind of masked their defensive deficiencies, I think, and that, you know, which later caught up to them. But he was unbelievable, and he had, you know, that stretch of dominance over the first couple months, and then at the end of the season, you know, it was pretty clear that Juice was the guy, and he kind of won the net, and had the playoffs started, he would have been the guy. Maybe get his first ever playoff start. So I think a lot of it, you're going to look back at both of, you know, those kind of things. And let's say you're starting from even, or maybe even if you look at the end of the season and Juice has a little bit of a nod. I don't even know if you can say that because it's been a complete off season, to be honest with you. So it's like starting all over again. So for players that, you know, like Pekka had a tough end of the season. He had a couple of good games there at the end, but, you know, he had a tough rocky road there, a couple other guys too. But I'm not leaning one way or the other, to be honest with you. I think it's a fluid situation that's probably yet to be determined. But, you know, a lot will probably be told, you know, depending on how they do the exhibition game. So I really don't have an answer for you. I think a lot of it's going to be on how this, you know, coming weeks shake out and how the guys look, and if, you know, Ben Vanderklok and obviously ultimately John Hines, they have a feeling about a guy, or maybe a guy's just flat out, you know, won the job and looks better, is going to get the job. But I don't think I could really pick one right now.
Hey, Mace, one of the things you and I have talked about a couple of times, we've talked about it on the show, that offseason, that first offseason with the number one title, you know, you went through it. You know, that it's a different set of expectations. Now, this is something different. I mean, you know, Juice was the clear number one at the end, but does he have that same kind of off-season thought process of, oh, heavy is the head that wears the number one?
Well, I guarantee you that, you know, it's probably more of a reality that is something that's attainable to him because he did win that job at the end of the season. But I think now in the NHL, every coach would probably say it, you know, going into playoffs. I've heard it from a couple of guys that I've listened to already, is that they're likely, if they're going to make a run, they're likely going to need two guys. And it's not like, you know, it used to be where no matter how well your number one goalie who has that title plays, that they're going to play 60, 65 games. Now the guys are so good and coaches know that, you know, every one of those points that you may be, you know, trying to lean on a guy to get him back going are too valuable. It could end up costing you, you know, playoffs or, you know, the President's Trophy or winning your division, home ice, whatever you want to call it. So now I think, you know, teams know, and the guys are so good. I mean, Juice and Pex, you know, on any given night, flip a coin. You ask any of the guys on the team and the coaches, they feel fine with either one of those guys, and that's complete honesty too. And you know that they do. So I don't think that either guy, you know, obviously they both want to start that game more than anything. But I know they'll both be ready, and Pekka had to adjust to that a lot at the end of the season this year, as being that support guy and trying to be ready when his number gets called upon. But I guarantee you both guys equally think that they deserve that number one title and to start that first game. And it's going to be, you know, I guess you always hear the term healthy competition, but they're both going for it. They're doing anything they can to be the starter name for that game. I can guarantee that.
Well, and Hines will have his first big decision anyway after making the decision for game one. A back-to-back with game two and three may make that decision even more difficult. We're on the line with Chris Mason of the Nashville Predators broadcast. Zach?
Now, Mace, obviously every player probably looks pretty hungry in there, but have you been surprised by anyone who looks particularly chomping at the bit so far in this early goings of training camp?
Well, I think, I mean, they all have, I guess there's different levels of, you know, I guess physical fitness and what they could do during the break and all that, those type of thing. But one guy that's kind of stuck out to me from what I've seen, and a lot of them do, I shouldn't say just one guy, but I think Philip Forsberg is a guy that to me looks like he's hungry. He's such a competitor, and he has so much expectation on his performance. Even if he's playing well, and he, you know, he's feeling it. He always wants to do better and more. And I just feel like he's in his mind, and I think in mine too, and a lot of people, that he hasn't reached the level that he can get to in terms of superstardom. I think that he can be a 40 goal scorer. I think that, you know, there's still a lot more growth and potential and a level that he can reach that he can get to. And I think that he always strives for that. And I know he's really hard on himself when he's not at that, and you can see sometimes in his play when he gets out there and he's, you know, he's really extra physical and intense, and he wants it. And I think to me that's a guy that's an X factor here, along with a couple of their other star players that maybe didn't have the best regular season this year. But to me, he's a guy that I think could be, if you can get to that level that we've seen him at, I think he could be a big difference maker moving forward. So his hunger, but all the guys, like, they get on the ice, you could just see they feel alive again, the smile, the intensity, and just the feeling that you have when you look at the guys out on the ice. It's where they want to be, and it's their happy place. So I think everybody in their own ways kind of just seeing them back on the ice has impressed me, put it that way.
13 days to go, but who's counting, right, Chris? So, I mean, Chris, we certainly appreciate you taking the time. We are up against a break. Thank you very much. And I have to ask this real quick, though. What do you think about having to call the games from a monitor?
You know what? I'm excited to be back. I think it's going to be a great challenge. Willie and I had the opportunity to do those virtual games, so I feel like we got a little bit of practice doing it that way. Would love to be, you know, in the bubble doing the games live, but I'll be happy to do it anyway. And I'll tell you what, we're going to bring as much passion and try to let people inside to what we're going through and our setup and what it's like doing what we're doing when we do it too. So it should be a cool adventure.
Well, I know a lot of fans are recording things for the broadcast. I know I did some recording last week as well. So we're going to do everything we can to bring a whole lot of Smashville to the home games that are going to happen in Edmonton. So, Chris, we look forward to hearing your call, and we will definitely grab you later on in the playoffs to get your take on what's going on.
I look forward to it. Thanks for having me on. Missed you guys.
Missed you guys, too. All right. Chris Mason, the TV color analyst for Fox Sports Tennessee for the Nashville Predators. Glad he could join us tonight. And we will be right back. We're going to talk more NARS Trophy. We're going to talk a few other things about training camp and take a look around the NHL as well. It's all coming up on Slapshot Radio right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
If you guys could see Coach Peterson right now, just living his best life.
He's actually going to do the Neutron Dance a little bit later on. Slapshot Radio on ESPN 102.5, The Game.
Who has more fun than us?
I do not know, actually. Anyway, so you know what? Sometimes the discussion in the commercial break is more interesting than what goes on the radio, so we're going to actually bring that discussion in. Zach, you had a really good question. I want to bring that discussion into the show.
Well, one thing you've noticed with, you know, the Predators especially, and really any team that plays in the West, throughout the playoffs, when you have such a large geographical space that separates every team in the West, travel is always a consideration. For the first time in this team's history, that's not going to be a factor. How do you think that plays into what is usually a heavier style of hockey in the West coming up with this playoffs, with the fact that you're not going to have to go from West Coast all the way to Nashville?
You're exactly right. I mean, it's going to help the Western squads for sure, because, you know, like Barry Trotz was in Washington when he won the Cup, and he didn't have to go. They went on trains. They had such short places. They had to go to Philadelphia, you know, New York. I mean, now he's in New York, and he's got New York right next door. He's got Jersey right away. So it's going to help the West teams for sure, because we were going California 2-2-2-1, and yep. Then California was
well, you go back to
Anaheim.
2016, yep.
Yeah, Anaheim, and then we had nothing left for San Jose in Game 7. We were done.
Yep.
But we played as hard as we could, and then the year that we had our best year that we went to the finals was Chicago, St. Louis, and then Anaheim. And you notice Peck had a tough time in the Pittsburgh game, and he played every night, and you're getting ready for a game the next night. You're traveling all day. You're never practicing. You're traveling all day, whereas up in the East, those guys just sort of hang out together, and they go and they do what they want.
No, I think it's absolutely correct. I think you look at this potential situation, I think the fight is more mental than physical.
Right.
Can you keep your eye on the ball, so to speak? And I think one thing that I think it was Coach Quenneville out of Florida said today was that players are excited when they're asked, you know, what are you going to do in the bubble? There's going to be hockey on all day for them to watch. So you got to imagine that the hotel bar is going to be the most interesting place to be in Edmonton and Toronto during all this.
Well, I mean, and you look at this, but I mean, Coach, you're absolutely right. You look at the 2016 run, the travel absolutely killed that team. You look at, and the funny thing about it is, if you look at the travel that Anaheim had to go through in 2017, they had to do Edmonton and Calgary back to back, which is almost like doing Nashville to Anaheim. It's
right.
It's only a couple hundred, maybe 200 miles shorter. So, I mean, you look at that. I think, let's put it this way. I don't think it is any – the advantage is so much smaller now for the Eastern Conference versus the Western Conference by doing it all in one spot.
Maybe we should do it every year. Then
I don't want to go there.
No, well, I think it has to do with the players have to adapt to everything. Adapt to seeing no fans. Adapt to hearing no noises. You have to adapt to the – everybody's going to be able to hear the guys on the ice now. Before
a 5-second delay now, yeah, the NHL announced.
The big buildings, like our buildings, used to drown out the other coach when they got it. So it's going to be different things for them. I know they're going to try to pipe some things in, but it's going to be a different thing for these players. And they're getting used to it right now. They're playing right down at Bridgestone every day.
Right.
You can't go down there. They're in a bubble, and that's good. But there's going to be some adaptation to the situation that you're used to.
Yeah, the interesting piece is going to be they're going to actually be able to hear a lot of the stuff that I can hear. You know, that's for sure. But, so talk about that. Yeah, they did announce today a 5-second delay to make sure that any non-family appropriate language – you might as well blank the mics out.
I mean, at this rate, let's be honest. Yeah. I mean, you're going to have the Stanley Cup being celebrated in silence.
So. it's going to be...
The one response I did laugh at was, okay, we're not going to have the language. Do we still get the nudity when the Stanley Cup is celebrated?
I'm
wondering. I hope not.
Only if Joe Thornton's there. Anyway, it's a fascinating thing to think about, that I think that... You may end up with a fresher Western Conference champion than you end up with normally.
And what's going to happen with the conference finals after? Where are we going
to? Well, they collapse into Toronto, right? Collapse into Edmonton. The Eastern Conference is going to have to travel to Edmonton.
They're going to have to go from New York to Edmonton. Mm-hmm. To play the games or wherever whoever wins the East.
Right.
New York, Tennessee, and the West doesn't have to go anywhere. I know you're away from your family for 2 months and this and that, but it's worth it when you win the cup, boy.
The family's coming to town as of the conference final. That's when the families are going to be allowed to come into town.
Are they going to be allowed to go to the games?
I don't know about coming to the games.
That I don't know about.
They're in the bubble, but yeah.
Okay.
But that's going to be fascinating to see how all of that plays out.
At that rate, why not? I mean, if they're in the bubble, you might as well come to the game.
It'd
be a little awkward to hear.
Give them a section each and
a spattering
spread them out.
Of screams spread them out. Coming
I'm trying to think that, the wives are there going, well, wait a minute. I'm sleeping next to the guy, and you're going to tell me I can't go to the rink?
Right.
Exactly.
But stranger things have indeed happened.
Well, let's just hope it happens to us, eh?
Man, could you imagine a breakup during that? No.
Oh, now that could be really, really interesting. So, what we're going to do next week, we're going to have our fearless prognostications that we will record, and if we're right, we'll play them back, and if we're wrong, we'll forget we ever did them. But
it's the first time you've ever done predictions, because all the rest of them have been thrown away.
We've never done any predictions before. Never, yep. ever have we done predictions.
I remember doing one.
Yeah, that's true, and you were right. That's why you remember it. But so we'll be talking about that next week. That's for sure. We'll be breaking down every series of the play-in. Then we're on between Game 1 and Game 2. Game 1 is Sunday the 2nd. It's a 1 o'clock face-off. And the interesting thing is we were looking at, pulling a TV outside and try and watch it outside. And I'm sitting here going, I don't know if I'm going to sit there and watch a hockey game in 95-degree weather at high noon. Don't know if that's going to happen. I think I'll have to just crank up the air conditioning and pretend to be cold.
I can't get my air conditioning cold, period.
It's a little too warm out there, sir?
Yeah, it's warm. It's warm, all right.
One of the things I do want to talk about, and we'll go through this, I want to talk about the lines that we're seeing in training camp. And let's go ahead and start going there. We'll probably take this through to the next segment. But, Zach, I know that you are just giddy in your delight at the top two lines.
I mean, the top three, really. If you asked me, we did talk about this during the pause, how would you ice the team? And the top three lines are exactly what I wanted out of this so far. Reunited Jofa, Duchesne, Turris, Granlund on the second, and then, the All-American line on the third.
Fourth line is going to end up with Sissons and Yarncroc on it with one extra guy, maybe Watson or something like that, or somebody. We got lots of forwards we could play at that position, and there are a good fourth line the way they go, because they kill penalties, they play a good defensive game, they don't get beat on when they're out there, And if the worst thing a coach could ever do is he wants to play four lines, get everybody going over the boards fast, and the fourth line gets scored on, everybody, all the players are going, why are you playing our fourth line? And we want to play more. It's just the worst thing. But if you have four lines going 35 seconds at a time over the boards, just going, three lines can't keep up to that pace. But four lines can. So if you got a real good fourth line with Sissons, Yarncroc, and Watson, or somebody, whoever else they have left over, they got lots of forwards. That's the way to do it, and you want to play it at a high tempo pace because guys get – they'll be pumped up the first period, and you'll just blow yourself out, and then you'll come out, and you just – it's the second period is really a hard part of the first game.
Honestly, the only thing I would change in that lineup is I'd have a fourth line of Sissons, Blackwell, and Drennan, and that's the only thing I would change.
You know, you'd love to get – and again, I think a lot of that is going to depend on – who the opponent is.
Yeah.
I mean, because, again, you go back where, you know, you watch that 2017 run, and you see, I mean, I know a lot of people, you know, were just like, oh, I can't believe we have this guy out on the ice. But the reality is, you know, Laviolette used Cody McLeod to absolute perfection. You didn't need him in the Chicago series.
You absolutely
needed him in Chicago. You absolutely needed him against Anaheim to be that disturber, that stirrer. You know, you needed that.
And you're going to get injuries too.
Exactly. So I do want to talk. And we're up against a break, guys. I want to go ahead and keep this conversation going. But I also want to talk about we've talked a lot about the lines. I want to talk about the defensive pairings because, quite frankly, the third pairing's really been fascinating to me, and I want to get to that right after this, right here on Slapshot Radio, ESPN 102.5, The Game. Elijah, not bad. Not bad. Slapshot Radio on ESPN 102.5, The Game. We've talked about forward lines, but I want to jump into the D pairings. Because the interesting piece that I have seen, and honestly, I haven't had the chance to get down. I'm hoping to get down there maybe Wednesday to catch the scrimmage, you know. But when you look at the D pairings, obviously Josi and Ellis, obviously Ekholm and Fabbro, but the third D pair on a pretty consistent basis has been Jared Tenorti and Corbinian Holzer.
And that was the third pairing towards the end of the year as well.
But they were a surprising success.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they weren't bad, that's for sure. You know, they brought some kind of bang and crash hockey to it. And they, you know, UC definitely had to bail them out a couple of times because of that. But you're going to have that regardless of who it is. I do worry a little bit about the speed of Arizona against them because Arizona is a team that scores almost exclusively in transition.
Yeah.
You're going to see them get burned. But that is where you're going to have to count on your goaltender to bail them out.
And here's the thing. They may get burned, but here's the thing. It's also hard to be fast when you're on your rear end.
Sure.
And that's where I think, again, playoff hockey, this is where I think a Nashville team needed to learn, you know, when you look at the main difference between the 16 and 17 team, the 17 team was a lot tougher. The 17 team had a lot more salt, had a lot more vinegar in their game, and we haven't seen that since that game. And the only ones that have been bringing that, quite frankly, we know that Johansson has it in him. We know that Forsberg has a real nasty streak that he hides behind that boyish smile. You know, I mean, but I look at, you know, Holzer and Tenorti, we know Holzer can have an attitude.
Well, you can also go this way. You can go with Ellis and Josi. You can go with Ekholm and Holzer, who's had an experience.
Interesting.
And then you got Fabbro and Tenorti, and then you got Hamus and Weber.
You've got those in the gun, yeah, no question.
And so you're splitting them out. You're splitting them up, and then you put and so if somebody doesn't, this is only if somebody doesn't play well. You start with Fabbro up in the top four because he's got needed. He needs to be there. If he has trouble early, then you could flip him that way. He could play against third and fourth lines instead of first and second lines. That's what happens with those guys.
I feel like if you see that happen, it won't be Holzer who moves up. It'll be Tenorti. Holzer will sit, and you'll see Weber and Fabbro on the third pairing.
Only because if he can play over there, because sometimes like Weber could never play the left side, and then he's a right shot, and that's why they keep it that way. But
true.
And Suter would never play the right side. So Weber and Suter, it's a good thing that they're I couldn't play him with anybody else because he got beat so bad on the outside, he couldn't turn that way. So
you know, but the interesting piece when you look at all of this, and the one name that we just mentioned and we talked about it a little bit on the break, let's bring it into this, is Dante Fabro. Yeah. And I mean, here's
key
the
guy,
thing.
Key guy, really.
I think, you know, it's funny because Chris Mason talked about Philip Forsberg as an X factor. I look at Dante Fabro as an X factor because here's the thing. What this team is going to be missing going into the playoffs for the first time in a few years is PK Subban. Mm-hmm. And you know what? Say what you want about PK Subban. He certainly knows how to get under somebody's skin.
And he knows how to play in the playoffs. And he was really good in the playoffs.
Oh, he was our best defenseman the last couple of years in the playoffs.
Exactly.
So when you look at that, this is where Dante Fabro, as a first-year player, I think has the potential to benefit even more from this break, Coach. I mean, you look at this as going, he's had almost a full regular season. He had the playoff experience the previous year.
Right.
And now he's had another training camp, almost like the beginning of a new season.
I think the key with Dante Fabro, can he be solid enough to unleash Matias Ekholm?
Ooh.
That's the real question.
Well, I think
if Ekholm can trust him enough to be there to where we can see the sheer dominance that Matias Ekholm is capable of, that's the real question. Because if you look at this year, Ekholm has been solid as a rock.
Yeah.
But you could see that he is definitely mentoring Fabro out there.
Right.
And that's
exactly
natural when you have a player who's that young, still learning. If he can get to the point where it's like, I don't have to watch out for him as much and I can really focus and hone in on my game, that's where this team can get back to that four horseman level that they were at prior to the PK Subban trade.
And I agree with that totally, but I was just going for a little bit of a different look because with Holzer up there
with that Ekholm, you've got two physical guys.
Physical
you've got
guys.
Two guys can really bring
it. You got Dante and you got the whole Tenorti, who's a tough guy with a young kid. Sort of take care of them out there and take them, you know, do the right things all the time. And we've talked about a lot of things, but one of the things that's going to have to happen is our special teams have to turn around. We were deep late, really bad shape. And they're a great penalty-killing team in Arizona, so we're going to have a tough time on the power play. And their power play struggles, so our penalty-killing has to be good. But we just got to get those two things straightened around because we were dead last in both areas. Not dead last, but
close enough for rock and roll.
Bottom third, for sure.
Yeah.
If there are two players who I think can really be key factors in this series, one of them's in the lineup right now, one of them's not. I think Cali Yarncroke, this is a series built for his style of play.
Exactly.
If you have Cali playing
Same
on that fourth
Sissons.
Line... Yeah, Sissons is another one. If you can get Yakov Trenin in there for Austin Watson, that's a guy who can bang, crash, bring some attitude, and has a boatload of skill behind it as well. Yeah. This feels like a player who is molded for the modern NHL playoffs.
I was kind of curious why he was on active or inactive because of...
I'm sorry.
It was to get him some games.
Unfit to play.
Unfit to play.
But no, he's no longer unfit to play.
He is now fit to play.
Okay.
He's apparently.
Fit to play, apparently.
Well, I mean, if you're unfit to play,
I just
then
why...
when you can play, then you are fit to play.
Okay. Well, I told my boss that on August 2nd, 4th, and 5th, I'll be unfit to work. So
at least for a couple of hours. You know, I think there's going to be a lot of folks. I don't think there's going to be a lot of business happening Tuesday and Wednesday, the 4th and 5th of August for a couple hours.
It's going to be great, though. Middle of the summer, and you got 99 degrees out, and you're out watching a hockey game.
It's March Madness for hockey. This is phenomenal.
It's
you literally can sit there.
Sit by the pool, turn on a hockey game.
And you know what? I bet the players are loving it, too, because they get up there on one flight, and like we said, we talked about the travel, and they don't have to fly all over the world to play the game.
You're
don't have
just
to go to L.A.,
hockey.
Over to New York and watch a hockey game, and away you go the next day.
I mean, you're literally, I mean, day one, the hockey doesn't start until 2 o'clock in the afternoon. But on
After that
Sunday,
I mean,
you've got hockey starting at 11 a.m., baby. I mean, it's 11 a.m. to potentially 1 or 2 in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, 14 hours. Do you realize the divorces that are going to happen off of this?
Oh, please. Do you realize the marriages this is going to save, considering how much the people have been together during quarantine?
Yeah, you're right.
You know what? It's
glass spoken, half full, all right?
Spoken like a true unmarried man right there. This is going to be fun, first off.
Great.
I mean, because, again, I mean, I'm sorry. I love hockey, but two of my favorite days of the year are the first 2 days of the NCAA tournament. Oh, it is wall-to-wall basketball. It's on all the time. You're flipping from game to game. You have the same thing going on right now.
Yeah.
I mean, you have the same thing starting on August 1st.
And if this is the rating smash that we expect it to be,
uh-oh,
do not be surprised if this becomes the norm.
Well, that's what I said. Let's do it all over again next year.
I mean, I think the play-in stuff, like, I think if you could have that, it's not going to be a best of five every year, but if you do, like, either a one game or a best of three play-in.
Yeah, just give one chance.
More playoff revenue.
Right.
More eyes on the league. And you build your own March Madness spectacular.
Exactly,
right,
and you build it up during the season at the end of the season because there's more teams closer to the playoffs.
What better way to announce the playoffs than to have this kind of play-in thing, you know?
Kenny Holland from the Red Wings, he's down to Edmonton.
Right.
He was with the Red Wings. He came up with this about 4 or 5 years, maybe even 6 or 7 years ago. He wanted to have a play-in game where 10 played 9, and then they only one game, and then they go right into the playoffs with the number, whoever wins.
Well, 8 played 9, and then they take over the 8 spot? Is that it?
Yeah.
I mean, I think, if you do that, as an introductory,
great.
That's the kind of thing that I think, honestly, that hockey has always been missing.
Mm-hmm.
Two more teams in the playoff, eh?
Well, I mean,
that's good.
I'll be honest.
Good.
I have absolutely no problem with a 24-team playoff field. I have no problem with it.
As long as you don't want to go for a whole week and just a best of three or a one game walk in.
You know what?
I hate baseball this time of year, but
you do the one game wild card. They're great.
They're great. They're super. Sold out.
4 days, game one, and then you have a back to back. Whether it's game one and two back to back or two and three back to back.
Yeah, because they have to work their way to
best
get
of three.
There. You have to work your way to get there.
And I mean, you know, with something like that, I mean, you're looking at, you can add those 8 extra playoff teams, you add 4 days, basically,
right,
to the, you add 4 days to the playoff calendar.
And it's 4 days to heal up for the top 4 seeds who make it.
There's your advantage.
We've been finishing every year on a Saturday night, and they have all Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday for a Thursday start. So might as well play some games in there with somebody, eh?
There we go.
Let's make
some moves, all right?
Yes, your new replacement commissioner coming up here. No kidding. I can see it now. The plot thickens right here. Come see me, Mr. Bettman. Anyway, but personally, I love the idea. I think this is going to change some minds on some of these things. Absolutely. Well, guys.
We did it again.
You've just blown another hour of your life listening to us on Slapshot Radio, and by golly, we thank you for it, and we thank you for joining us tonight. We're back next week at 7 p.m. with our playoff preview show. A big thank you to Chris Mason for joining us this evening, and also a big thank you to our sponsors, Hermitage Family and Cosmetic Dentistry, Cool Springs Wines and Spirits, and Lazy Boy Furniture Galleries. When you visit one of our sponsors, please make sure you tell them you heard about them on Slapshot Radio and give them a big thank you for their support. For our producer, Sir Elijah, our co-hosts Brent Peterson and Zach McCann, I'm Paul McCann saying good night and good hockey.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and I have discovered a fun new escape from the daily grind, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has hundreds of social casino-style games and it's all free to play anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So get to chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21+.